We welcome you to the Mormon Channel. This is Past Impressions, a program on the issues, events, people, and inspiring stories associated with the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, professor and department chair of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. I'm the host of this program, and I am honored to have with us as our guest today Richard E. Turley, Jr., the assistant historian of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and assistant recorder of the church. And so, Brother Turley, we're grateful to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Brother Turley, as we talk about the importance of history, why don't you first tell us a little bit about your background and your love for history and how you came to be the assistant church historian and recorder?
I developed a love for church history as a child, visiting church historic sites and learning about the history of the church from my parents. Then over time, I got to the point where in high school, I was deeply immersed in Latter-day Saints scripture and history. During my senior year of high school, I was appointed as the academic vice president of the Utah Salt Lake Valley North Seminary District, and that made me responsible for creating questions and answers for seminary bowl competitions among 15 schools in the valley. That necessitated my delving fairly deeply into church history since I was the judge of what was right and what was wrong.
You were the Alex Trebek of Seminary Bowl in the Salt Lake Valley.
That's correct. And Seminary Bowl was modeled on the old college bowl that people are familiar with. From that point, I went to college. And in college, I developed an even deeper interest in church history. But at the same time, going to school in the 1970s, I was informed by people that there were no careers really in history. Or the quip that we have is that there is no future in history. And so I went a different route. At my father's suggestion, I went into law because he thought it was a flexible career and would allow me to go about doing whatever I wanted to do later on in life. I graduated from law school in 1985 in April, went to work for a Chicago-based law firm that had a Salt Lake office. And then in the summertime, I took the bar, was sworn in officially as a lawyer in September. In December, I received a telephone call from a member of the Quorum of 12 Apostles of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, one of the leaders of the church. And that led to a couple of other interviews and extending to me an offer to work as the director of the church historical department, as it was called at the time. So at age 29, I suddenly found myself in the kind of position that I could only have dreamed of having before, and that is essentially having access to all of the records and historical materials of the church. From that time in 1986 until the present, I've had various roles in church history. I've been the managing director of the church history department, the managing director of the family history department concurrently, and then at one point we merged those two departments to form the family and church history department. Then 2 years ago, we split the departments apart again. And at that point, I was named as the assistant church historian and recorder.
Oh, that's really amazing and an interesting journey from law to being a historian. But I know right down the hall from you is another lawyer, Elder Marlon K. Jensen, is the church historian. What is the difference between the historian and the assistant historian? How do you and Elder Jensen work together?
The church historian recorder has the scriptural responsibilities that we'll be talking about in this program today. And I, as the assistant church historian and recorder, share those responsibilities as delegated to me by Elder Jensen. And at this time, the way we've split up responsibilities is that he handles the executive administrative responsibilities, and I handle the writing of church history.
Oh, interesting. Well, you know, just across the street from this studio where we're sitting today is a beautiful, beautiful new building. And when you see all of the resources, not only in that building, but throughout the church, there are a lot of resources, a lot of effort, a lot of personnel devoted to history. Why is history so important to The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
On the day the church was formally organized as a legal entity, April the 6th, 1830, Latter-day Saints believe that God gave a revelation to the prophet Joseph Smith. And the very first words in that revelation are, "Behold, there shall be a record kept among you." The first three officers of the church were a first elder, Joseph Smith, a second elder, Oliver Cowdery, and a church historian and recorder, also Oliver Cowdery. So from the very beginnings of the church, there was this responsibility of keeping a record. And Latter-day Saints have kept meticulous records from the very beginning to the present time. I don't mean to imply they kept perfect records, but they've exerted substantial effort towards keeping records from that day to the present, which makes, in my opinion, Latter-day Saints probably the most documented people in the world. I can't think of another people of comparable size who have as rich a documentary record as the Latter-day Saints.
Was that a common in 1830? Were other organizations or entities as involved in keeping records?
As I said, I can't think of another people of comparable size who kept records like that. Certainly, there were record keepers in the United States, for which we're grateful. The more records we have, the easier it is for us as historians to discern what was going on at any given time. But I think Latter-day Saints have an abundant source of records that many people don't have.
You know, I find that especially fascinating in as much as Joseph Smith was not formally trained and had very little formal schooling, and yet by revelation feels passionately about keeping a detailed record. You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and with me is Richard E. Turley, Jr., the assistant historian and recorder for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We've been talking about the importance of recording history in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And Brother Turley, you were talking about the revelation that came with the organization of the church to establish a record. What else do we know from the revelations themselves and from the writings of the early leaders of the church about the importance of keeping a very accurate and detailed record of the restoration?
As I mentioned earlier, Latter-day Saints believe that God speaks to man and that those spoken communications called revelations can be recorded. And we have a book of those revelations received by the prophet Joseph Smith and his successors that we call the Doctrine and Covenants. In section 47 of the Doctrine and Covenants, there is what we call a job description for the church historian. And it begins, "Behold, it is expedient in me that my servant John should write and keep a regular history." To us, that means that the church historian, in the first part of his job description, is specifically tasked with the responsibility of both writing and keeping. Writing, I think most people understand. Keeping, we think, has two meanings. One of those meanings is to preserve. Another is to chronicle, so something similar to writing. It goes on to say in that same verse that the church historian is to assist Joseph Smith, in this case, in transcribing all things which he shall be given. And to us, that transcription is a recording function. So here you have a section of the Doctrine and Covenants that gives John Whitmer, Oliver Cowdery's successor as church historian and recorder, specific responsibilities as a historian and as a recorder. Verse 2 says, "He can also lift up his voice in meetings whenever it shall be expedient." We interpret that as meaning that the church historian also has a responsibility as a consultant to church leaders and members on historical matters. So the historian can't just be silent. The historian has to speak up and help to interpret church history for the members of the church. Verse 3 says, "And again I say unto you that it shall be appointed unto him to keep the church record and history continually." Now, at first, that verse seems to duplicate what verse 1 says, but the operative word of difference is continually. I was an English undergraduate, although I did a history topic for my honors thesis. And as an English major, I learned the difference between continual and continuous. Continuous means episodic, occurring and then having a space and then occurring again and having another space, whereas continual means without ceasing. To me, the importance of verse 3 is that this history is not to be kept episodically, but is to be kept without ceasing. And that's something we're striving to do now that we have never done before. And finally, verse 4 is very important for Latter-day Saints. It reads, "Wherefore it shall be given him, inasmuch as he is faithful, by the Comforter to write these things." So although we write academic histories and although we participate in professional conferences, and that's one form of writing, when we're writing for Latter-day Saints in particular, we seek to write things in a spiritual sort of vein, guided by the spiritual direction that we're entitled to receive.
What about this idea that sometimes we are criticized for writing faithful history? In light of that revelation, how can you not write faithful history? What is that argument or that issue really all about when we're criticized for writing faithful history? What are people talking about?
At times, people are saying that in an academic realm where people can't use the scientific method to prove or disprove a faith statement, that people should not write with a faith kind of a statement in mind. And we understand that argument, of course. I myself personally and many of my colleagues publish in professional journals, and we publish books with university presses. And in those environments, we recognize that that is the case, and we seek to make our statements be consistent with the academic realm. When you're speaking to Latter-day Saints, though, who share common beliefs, and you're talking about matters of faith, then it's perfectly appropriate to speak with people who share that faith on that common ground, and that's what we do.
I think that's exactly what the Revelation says that writing for the church should do. Well, what about the continued efforts after this revelation was given and John Whitmer is appointed to be the historian to write that continual history? How does it continue, and what are the efforts of the church to keep that continual record of the church?
The church begins to expand at this point, and as it expands, it of course has operations and units in various locations. The 69th section of the Doctrine and Covenants becomes a kind of addendum to the job description of the church historian, and it has some interesting language in it. Verse 3 of that section says that the church historian shall continue in writing and making a history. Now, that, I think, is a reemphasis on this idea of continually. Don't stop that task just because you've got additional responsibilities. Then it goes on to say that this should be of all the important things which the church historian shall observe and know concerning my church. Now, I think that's an important point. At the general church level, where the church historian and recorder and his assistant write, that responsibility of writing is to focus on the important items, leaving some of the more detailed items to people in other locations. And we can talk in a minute about what I mean by that.
Okay. You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, and our guest today is Richard Turley, the assistant church historian and recorder. We've been talking, Brother Turley, about the history that was commanded by the Lord that be kept in the church. We've been talking in section 69 of the Doctrine and Covenants with additional information that the Lord revealed to the prophet Joseph. Let's talk more about what was expected of this historian and the history that was to be kept.
As the church grew, the historian's office and the functions of the church historian and recorder grew. Verse 4 of section 69 says that he, the church historian, shall receive counsel and assistance from Oliver Cowdery and others. In other words, this isn't a responsibility to be done single-handedly. There are other people who can assist. Then verse 5 gets to this idea of decentralization. It says, "And also my servants who are abroad in the earth should send forth the accounts of their stewardships to this central location." To us, that means that the responsibility for record keeping and history keeping is not just on the general level, but it's local as well. And in fact, in the last year or so, in our efforts to keep this church history continually, we have, with the approval of the First Presidency of the church, met with the area presidencies from around the world and have talked with them about the responsibilities they now have to oversee the collecting, the preserving, and the sharing of church history within their areas. So there have been people called at the area level and sometimes at the country level, as well as at the stake and ward level, to write and keep the history of the church. Verse 6 says that the headquarters of the church will be a seat and a place to receive and do all these things. So despite the decentralization, you're still going to have a central location for doing it. And that's why we constructed a church history library, which President Thomas S. Monson dedicated last year in June. And then finally, verse 7 makes an interesting point. It says that the church historian shall travel many times from place to place and from church to church, or we would say church unit to church unit, that he may the more easily obtain knowledge. That is a directive that the church historian not be an armchair historian, someone who attempts to write about the church throughout the world without traveling. In fact, it's a requirement that the church historian travel from country to country and from church unit to church unit in order to better understand the history of the church in those regions. And there's a purpose for all of that. The scripture goes on to say that he may the more easily obtain knowledge, preaching and expounding, writing, copying, selecting, and obtaining all things which shall be for the good of the church and for the rising generations that shall grow up on the land of Zion, to possess it from generation to generation forever and ever. That's a description of the audience. The history that's kept and the records that are kept are intended not just for the current generation, but for future generations as well.
I really like that phrase there, for the good of the church, but then I really like that for the rising generations. And I see that as so important as we become somewhat distanced in time from those early events of the history of the church, the restoration. It's even more important that the rising generation continue to know their roots, continue to know those important things, because you remember in the Book of Mormon, the example of those that were of the rising generation, the young ones of King Benjamin's day, then they were the ones that fell away from the faith because they probably didn't keep that connection with their history.
Well, and we all know that Latter-day Saints value education. Latter-day Saints also are familiar with a verse in section 93 of the Doctrine and Covenants, verse 24, which defines truth as a knowledge of things as they are and as they were and as they are to come. In other words, it's not enough to know just what's happening at the present time. Mm-hmm. We have to know about the past if we're going to make good decisions about the future.
Tell me about after the revelation, as we've gone through the scriptures, tell me how the Lord, or better yet, maybe it'd be better to say, what did John Whitmer and the leaders of the church, what did they do to fulfill that charge that were given in those revelations? What were the efforts of the church in recording that history and compiling those important things?
Oliver Cowdery apparently began keeping a history. It was probably a narrative history of the church. That record has since been lost, but Oliver Cowdery published a series of letters in a Latter-day Saint publication called The Messenger and Advocate. And we believe that the content of those letters probably reflects fairly well what was in this original, now lost history. When Oliver Cowdery was replaced by John Whitmer eventually began keeping a history of his own, beginning with where Oliver Cowdery left off. That document is now in the possession of the Community of Christ. And with the cooperation of that church, we have made copies of that record and have that fully accessible to us today. I think it's also important to recognize that in the earliest days of the church, the record keeping was principally confined to recording the church's scriptures, the Book of Mormon in its manuscripts, and also the Doctrine and Covenants revelations, and also the keeping of minutes and membership information. So you had this history effort and recording effort. That continues for some time, until 1842, when Willard Richards becomes the church historian. And it's really with Willard Richards in 1842 and 1843 that the role of the church historian recorder finally settles down into a definable pattern.
We're honored to have as our guest Richard Turley, assistant church historian and recorder. We've been talking about how the Lord revealed to the prophet Joseph Smith and other leaders of the church a charge to keep a continual record of the church. Brother Turley, you were talking to us about Willard Richards becoming a historian and the Nauvoo period. Why was that such a pivotal period of time with regards to church history, and what happened as a result of that?
Willard Richards' appointment was significant because it was during his tenure that the office of church historian became really well established. From 1830 until 1842, there were numerous occupants of the position. Some of them really didn't do their job as fully as they could have done. But with Willard Richards, you finally had someone who had the background and the characteristics that were needed to carry out the office in the way that then becomes the pattern for future historians and recorders. Willard Richards took into hand the role of writing Joseph Smith's history. Joseph Smith made numerous efforts to keep a history in fulfillment of the commandment that he was given on the day of the church's organization. But given his many responsibilities and his relative lack of education, it was painful for him. He referred to language as a prison. And that gives you some sense of how he felt about writing. So for the most part, he did not take pen to paper personally. Instead, he typically dictated to scribes or did his work through scribes and secretaries. Willard Richards took a history of Joseph Smith that was begun in 1838 and began to flesh it out with the help of others in the historical community of his day. And he worked on that history and brought it up to August of 1838. So from Joseph Smith's earliest years to August of 1838, by the time the prophet Joseph Smith died in 1844. Then he continued working on the history until the Latter-day Saints were driven from Nauvoo in 1846. He then packed up the various historical materials that had been gathered, and he had gathered much material to go into the history, put that material in boxes, and then loaded those boxes into wagons. And those records were carried across the American plains to the area that becomes Utah later on, and they're left in storage for the most part until the Latter-day Saints have established themselves well enough in the Utah area that they really have the time and the resources to begin focusing on the history again. When he gets back to writing the history again, he discovers that these records that had been in storage had been invaded by rodents. And that some of them had been damaged. So the records are removed from the boxes, but he doesn't get much work done on the history before he passes away in 1854. Nevertheless, his contribution had been a signal one. He had laid this pattern on how you do history. He recognized that to write history well, you have to have records. And so he began during the Nauvoo period to contact people personally, sometimes by correspondence, gathering from them the records which then become the basis for writing the history of the church. And we have in our possession today many of these early drafts that he created and some charts that he created showing what sources were intended to go into the history at various parts. That allows us to take this history and figure out where its various components came from. Now, that's very important because later on, subsequent generations begin to misinterpret the documentary history of the church as Joseph Smith's journal. That's not what it is. The journals of Joseph Smith were publishing through the Joseph Smith Papers Project, which could be a subject for a future show. But the documentary history of Joseph Smith, or what's just called the history of the church, is actually a biography of Joseph Smith written by Willard Richards and other church historians in the first person singular as though Joseph Smith were talking from other sources that he and his fellow historians and clerks gathered. Now, they created history in those days in very much the same way that we create scripts for movies today. When scriptwriters prepare a movie about a historical figure, they gather sources from people who knew that individual, and then they use those sources to create a script which is then in the first person singular. And that was perfectly appropriate during that time period. Today, historians follow a somewhat different set of principles, and when people take today's principles and begin to apply it to the documentary history, they may misinterpret the history if they don't understand its nature.
Interesting. And so we have the history of the church that becomes kind of the foundational, first real official history of the church. Is that how we would say that, as an official history of the church?
It is the official history of the church. And it is a remarkable history, particularly for that time period. The people who compiled it exerted a tremendous amount of effort, and that effort paid off. It remains to this day the single most complete source on the history of the church during the Joseph Smith time period. It's the place where many people should begin their studies. But they should begin it with an understanding of how it was compiled.
And I think that's where the Joseph Smith Papers Project will be very, very helpful in helping us to put things in their proper context as well.
Yes, the Joseph Smith Papers Project allows us to gather the original documents that were used to compile the history so that you can take not only the history, but you can take the documents that went into the history and understand them together.
You know, as we've talked today with Brother Turley, I'm just again impressed at how faithful the early leaders of the church were to that commandment of the Lord to keep that record continually. I'm inspired that in the back of a covered wagon crossing the plains, when space and weight is so valuable, that the records of the church would have such a prominent place. And the sacrifices of the early saints to bring about our historical records today that we are able to be blessed by. And Brother Turley, we're grateful to have you with us. In the future, we'll talk about how that history that came across the plains and that continue to be built can bless all the rest of our lives. So we look forward to having you as a guest again in the future on Past Impressions.
Thank you very much.
We look forward to you joining us again in the future as we talk about history of the church, people, places, events that inspire and motivate us to live the gospel better and to understand better the restoration of the gospel. I'm Brent Topp, and until next time, we'll see you on Past Impressions.